Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. As humans, we have a real love affair with technology. From the beginning of civilization, we've been using increasingly complex tools that make our lives easier and more enjoyable. And to do this, we've had to mess around with the natural world, and sometimes that has really bad consequences. One tool we've been using is a set of chemicals called PFAS. These are industrial chemicals that are leveraged by a variety of businesses, and their use has caused a lot of problems for Michiganders. A couple of years ago, 35 sites were found to be contaminated with PFAS, which makes for less clean air, water, and soil for the humans and animals that live nearby. The problem with PFAS is that it doesn't break down easily, and it gets recycled again and again through our products and environment. We have talked a lot on this show in recent years about PFAS, about its growing consequences here in the Great Lakes State, and about the idea that eventually we're going to have to figure out a way to sort of turn that in a different direction. A new study shows some promising signs that may point to a solution. To talk about this, we have Tom Perkins with us. He is a freelance writer who has been covering concerns related to PFAS for the Guardian. Tom, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi, thanks, Stephen.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, let's go back and talk about what PFAS is, what makes it up, and why it has gotten so much attention over the last couple of years.
Sure. PFAS are a class of chemicals that are used to make thousands of consumer products, generally to resist water stains and heat, but they're effective, very effective at that. But the problem with them is they don't naturally break down. So as you mentioned, they're once they're produced, they're really continuously cycling through the environment and getting in our water, getting in our food, in the air, and they're linked to a lot of terrible diseases, cancer, kidney problems, liver issues, high cholesterol, birth defects. They cause problems with the immune systems. They're everywhere. They're widely used, but they don't go away. And we're finding that the more we look at them, we're finding that they're pretty toxic.
Yeah, yeah. I always want to try to make this really easy for people to identify or understand. But talk about, if you are someone who lives here in the state of Michigan, where you might see the effects of this PFAS. I think for people who've paid pretty close attention, there's this kind of foam that you see in some of the waterways that is related to it. But talk about how it's affecting our lives and beaches and drinking water all over the state.
Yeah, it's because so many different industries use the chemicals and some of the applications. You're going to find them everywhere from plating facilities to, it's commonly used in firefighting foam at airports and military bases. So there are a lot of PFAS hotspots around the state. Oscoda is an Air Force base up there that, the groundwater is just pretty contaminated. A lot of drinking water wells in the area have high levels. There's a out in western Michigan. There's a former tannery that was dumping a lot of their waste straight into the aquifer, and so people who were pulling water out of the pulling water from their wells around there had pretty high levels. You know, but even like in Ann Arbor, the city's pulling its water out of the Huron River. Huron River's has consistently had pretty high levels. So you know, you get a lot in drinking water, but also we're exposed to the chemicals in our everyday lives. They're used in cookware, nonstick cookware. They're in food packaging, dental floss, water resistant rain gear. You know, just there's so many different applications that you know you're going to encounter them pretty consistently in everyday life and in the drinking water.
Yeah. So let's talk about this new technique that scientists have come up with that might help us fight PFAS more effectively than we have been.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So what makes the chemicals so difficult to break down is their carbon atoms are fluorinated, and it's this fluorination that really makes the chemicals resist high temperatures and water and everything else, and it's really just that's what's made them virtually indestructible, and you know, scientists and researchers have tried different techniques to destroy the chemicals, incineration, you know, just all kinds of different things, but nothing has worked. You try to incinerate them, it just sends the chemicals up into the air. One of the more promising discoveries recently is a way to defluorinate them and defluorinate the chemicals, and it's showing that it can happen in a lab setting, but this is, you know, it's very early in the process. Mm-hmm. And basically what this would do is, you know, when you have how this would be applied to the real world is you would, when you have a water utility, for example, that's filtering contaminated water, well, then you, once you pull it all out of the drinking water supplies, you have to do something with the PFAS. And, you know, you can't incinerate it. You can try putting it in a landfill. You can try injecting it deep into the Earth's surface, all things that we're doing right now, but the chemicals are still going to be there. So this new method would allow us after we, or after utilities collect, or filter PFAS from the water to defluorinate them and turn them into something that's pretty inert, pretty benign, and, scientists hope this is going to kind of solve the problem.
Yeah. I'm talking with Tom Perkins. He's a freelance reporter for a variety of outlets, including the Metro Times, Slate, and The Guardian. He has a recent article in The Guardian about good news related to a study about PFAS, this forever chemical that is produced by a number of different industries and has really been taking a toll on the environment here in Michigan. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call. Tell us how concerned you are about PFAS and other kinds of pollution that we live with here in Michigan. Have you taken particular steps to ensure that you're drinking safe water or eating safe foods that may have been contaminated by PFAS? Are there other toxins or chemicals that you're concerned about contaminating the environment here in Michigan? Of course, we live in Southeast Michigan, which is one of the dirtiest places in terms of industrial pollution in the country. Talk about the ways in which that plays out in your daily life. What are the things that remind you of the need to put more regulations, perhaps, on industry so that they don't create so much pollution, and for government to act more aggressively to clean up the dirty environment that we're left with? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page, put comments there, or go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Tom, how optimistic about this breakthrough are these scientists, and what would it mean if you're really able to effectively break down PFAS? Is this something that would put a permanent solution to this within reach?
I think there's room for, there's reason for optimism. But the problem is that there needs to be stronger regulations around them in the first place. If they get out in the environment and, if they're being used in thousands of products that we're encountering daily, being able to break them down doesn't really help us. It doesn't really help me that, this new process might be able to take care of them, but I still have PFAS in my waterproof boots that are in my house, for example, and I'm exposed to them there. They're in my food packaging. So it's big news. It's going to do a lot of good, but it's sort of addressing the problem, further down the line when really like the chemicals need to be, I think most public health advocates and PFAS researchers will say the chemicals need to be restricted and, only used for essential purposes, mm-hmm. not in food packaging, not in boots, where they're going to end up out in the environment anyway. Once we pull the chemicals out of the water, something needs to happen with them that's not incineration or injecting them into the earth or putting them in landfills, because those just, that's not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Dan in Southfield. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen.
Hey.
What disturbs me about all of these conversations is that, if I walked up and lit your house on fire, you'd hold me responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, what gives people the right to, incinerate our environment and not be held accountable? I have no answers to it. I just don't get it.
Yeah. Dan, it's a great question. And it's a frustration that I think a lot of us share about this kind of activity and the systems of accountability that exist. Tom, can you talk some about the regulatory environment and the process or the possibility, I guess, of trying to hold those companies that are creating this mess responsible for what they did and, of course, responsible for the cleanup?
Right. Yeah, there's been a little bit more pressure on industry from one, the Biden administration, and two, state regulators at Eagle. I think Michigan's actually been a lot better than most states in tackling the problem. One thing state regulators here have been doing is identifying which businesses are discharging the chemicals into waterways or the sewer system and working with them to find alternatives to, different ways of disposing them so they don't end up at the water utility or out in waterways. The Biden administration just last year unveiled a sweeping new plan that's designed to rein in the chemicals use and really try to put some new health advisories in place around some of the compounds. But yeah, a lot of public health advocates and researchers say that it's not enough. And there hasn't been a lot of satisfying accountability around this. I think maybe where you're seeing that most is in the court system. Mm-hmm. There have been quite a few lawsuits and state governments and private residents who are bringing lawsuits against DuPont and Dow and Chemours and the other PFAS producers are really having some success there. There needs to be more pressure from government, as I said before, there needs to be the general consensus is that they just really need to be restricted as a class, and Actually, the state of Maine was the first to enact, well, they haven't enacted yet. They approved a ban on any kind of non-essential use of PFAS compounds. So that'll go into effect, I think, in 2029. And I think that is, you know, that's for the entire class of chemicals, not just one or two or three or four kinds of PFAS, which is generally what's regulated in different states and federally.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the direction things are going, but it's just, it's really slow. And there's just, like I said, has not been a lot of satisfying accountability.
Yeah. Dan, again, thanks very much for the call and the really provocative question. Before we end, Tom, I want to talk just a little about other things that you think might be particularly dangerous and polluting that maybe we're not doing a good enough job paying attention to. What should we be putting more time and money and resources into fixing in our environment, which, of course, is greatly affected, as I said, by lots of pollution?
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole, I think the issue is the whole regulatory system really is set up in a way that benefits industry and doesn't adequately protect the public. There are something like, you know, pretty close to 100,000 man-made chemicals now, and a very small fraction of those have been independently studied. The way it's set up now, whenever industry cooks up a new chemical, you know, they do their own studies, they do their own tests, but generally speaking, they can send things to the market with next to no scrutiny. And that's how you get a situation like this, where, you know, they developed 12,000 kinds of PFAS and sent them to the market. And after decades of use, we're finding, oh, these are toxic. These are terrible for the environment. These are dangerous. You know, they never should have been sent to the market in the first place. There should have been a much more rigorous review, and you don't have that. And so, yeah, now there are a lot of pesticides. I mean, I only buy organic produce these days because I know what's going into the pesticides. You know, a lot of food packaging, BPAs, BPS. You know, those kind of chemicals, it's, you know, you're cooking with them every day, you're getting them in your food. Those are a real problem. There's just a whole galaxy of chemicals out there that we don't really know much about. So I don't know that there's really like one or two specific chemicals that, you know, we need to really be looking at outside of PFAS, but I think it's just the whole regulatory system needs to be overhauled and designed to protect the public and not, I think a lot of people really feel like it's set up to benefit industry at this point, and that needs to be rethought.
Sure. Okay. Tom Perkins, freelance reporter for a variety of different outlets. Great work in The Guardian regarding this PFAS study. And thanks for joining us here on Detroit Today.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to discuss some more good news, particularly the good things about Michigan's towns and people, with two of my favorite folks, folks who do a lot of traveling here in the state. The guys from Under the Radar Michigan are coming up next to talk about their new book and all the fun places it took them. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.